WMUB's first home was on Miami University's campus. 15 years ago, it became part of Cincinnati Public Radio and moved to rented space on Central Parkway. Now, we're building a dedicated home for our local public radio stations in Evanston. Follow our progress at cinradio.org/move.
This is Backed Up from Cincinnati Public Radio. I'm Ella Rowan.
And I'm Becca Costello. This is the last official episode of Backed Up. If you've made it this far, you really are our number one fans.
Number one fans of a number two podcast, am I right? Shout out to Confuse Enthuse on Instagram, who gave us that delightful joke.
This is the crucial moment in any mystery, the denouement, to bring together all the clues, rip off the mask, and reveal Old Man Jenkins was the real monster all along.
There they are, Sheriff. Mr. Creeps and his partner, Mr. Crawl.
We've been keeping track of the suspects on our mystery bulletin board here. Let's have a look at the lineup, shall we? There's the 1968 agreement that brought the city of Cincinnati and Hamilton County together, but didn't clearly spell out who is really in charge.
Because there's really nobody in charge when everybody's in charge.
That's where the Metropolitan Sewer District of Greater Cincinnati comes in, and a lot of people blame them directly.
I think it's the system that's the villain.
They're all villains.
We know the rain is what causes all of this to happen in the first place.
When it rains here, that makes my job a lot harder.
But this isn't a humanity versus nature thing. The rain by itself wouldn't even cause problems without a couple of other suspects: climate change and impervious surfaces.
The implications of climate change are going to happen to all of us.
Last but not least, our top suspect: money.
No money came from the feds. When they gave us the decree, they didn't say, here's some money to help out.
Well, here they are, the suspects, all lined up. Now, time for the big reveal?
Sorry, but we don't have that kind of tidy resolution for you. Scooby-Doo taught us there's always a bad guy, and it only takes a 30-minute episode to unravel the mystery and bring the villain to justice. But of course, that's not how reality works. It's a lot more complicated and nuanced. We couldn't even cover everything in 6 episodes.
We started solving the mysteries of the sewers almost a year ago, and we had hundreds of questions. Why does raw sewage get dumped into waterways and get backed up into basements? If everyone knew this was happening a century ago, why hasn't it stopped yet?
We answered those questions and more in the first 5 episodes of Backed Up, but can we really answer whose fault is it? I'm not sure that's even the right question to ask. We know now it's not any one person or thing that puts raw sewage into rivers and basements, and playing the blame game doesn't seem very constructive.
The mystery solving has been really fun, but I think it's time to stop looking for the bad guy and start figuring out where we go from here. Today, we're taking the suspects down from the bulletin board and making room for some solutions. Is there a better way to operate the Metropolitan Sewer District of Greater Cincinnati without all the political turmoil? Is funding going to stonewall progress forever? And how many references to our favorite movies and TV shows can we cram into this final episode?
You guys realize you live in a sewer, right?
Perhaps, but perhaps your civilization is merely the sewer of an even greater society above you.
The stakes are pretty high, even if you've never had a sewer backup in your own home or had to cancel a kayaking trip because of a sewage overflow. Because we're all paying for this.
Since 2004, MSD has paid about $28 million to homeowners in settlement agreements to repay them for damages.
When you include things like the cost of cleaning up properties after a sewer backup and preventing sewer backups, MSD has spent about $160 million over the past 20 years.
And when you say MSD paid $160 million, you mean we paid $160 million, right?
Yep. Because that money comes from ratepayers.
Okay, let's just tackle this thing one question at a time. First, has any other community figured out how to fix all of this? Cincinnati is not alone in this boat. Actually, we're in great company.
But even home wasn't safe for many basement apartments in Brooklyn when sewer systems backed up and poured out of people's toilets and tubs.
San Francisco is the only coastal city in California that treats both sewage and stormwater in the same system of pipes and treatment facilities.
As Paris prepares to host the 2024 Olympic Games, it's taking on a big challenge, cleaning up the Seine River.
Now, this sewer is designed to stop sewage from flowing from the old Victorian sewer into the Thames, as it does 50 or 60 times a year.
How have we got to the point where we're all like, oh yeah, there's just loads of shit everywhere in the waters? Fine. How have we got to that point where everyone seems to be chill with that?
Combined sewers are super common in Europe. According to the United Kingdom's Environment Agency, all the sewage utilities in England are combined with stormwater.
About 700 communities in the United States have combined sewer systems and experience combined sewer overflow. Most are in the Northeast and around the Great Lakes.
Let's take a look at Minneapolis, which started separating its combined sewer system way back in the 1960s. In the mid-80s, officials accelerated the plan to finish within 10 years.
Today, only 0.2% of the Minneapolis sewer system is still combined. As of 2018, they're not even considered a combined sewer system anymore. They were able to terminate their CSO permits with the EPA.
The Minneapolis plan cost about $330 million from 1985 to 1995. That would be less than $1 billion today. Officials there say it saved billions of dollars by avoiding the cost of building bigger treatment plants and storage.
Cincinnati has done a bit of sewer separation, but only in specific circumstances. We never set out to separate the systems entirely. And even if MSD had started separating pipes back when Minneapolis did, it would have cost a lot more here.
Minneapolis had to build 190 miles of new storm pipes and 12 miles of new sanitary sewage pipe. The MSD system today has 863 miles of combined sewer that would need to be separated, about 4.5 times more.
So could Cincinnati have done this? We posed that question to historian and retired MSD worker Jack Rennekamp.
Could the city or the county or MSD have done anything differently to end up in a place other than where we are today?
There was always the possibility of doing things differently, and would it have changed our lives and the way we exist today? And that's a curiosity that always intrigues me, both as a historian and as a science fiction and fantasy enthusiast, is to say, what if we had made these changes earlier in our timeline, what would it be like today? And how would that have benefited us today?
I love a good what if question. What if, instead of the 1968 agreement, officials back then figured out a different way to handle sewage in Greater Cincinnati, a way of working together that didn't involve so much political tug of war?
Why? Why did you think you had the authority to do that? I'm just going to be straight. Why did you think you were able to do that?
It seems like the solution would be so simple. MSD is a county sewer district, so why does the city of Cincinnati even need to be involved? Absolutely no city tax dollars support MSD because all its funding comes from the ratepayers.
So yeah, why wouldn't the city just hand off the whole thing to the county and let it be someone else's problem?
Well, there's almost no chance of that happening because it would be a disaster for the city budget. It weirdly has to do with something very unsewer-like, employee retirement programs.
This is kind of a sidebar, but everything related to managing MSD hinges on this, so stick with us.
Most public workers in Ohio are part of a statewide pension called the Ohio Public Employees Retirement System, or OPERS. I think this is my favorite acronym. Ohioans really do say OPE all the time.
Cincinnati is the only city in Ohio with its own retirement system.
The history of the Cincinnati Retirement System, or CRS, is actually pretty cool. It was created in 1931, before OPERS and Social Security. Way to be ahead of the curve, Cincinnati.
But now, that special status puts the city in a really tough spot because of this very ominous-sounding thing called an unfunded liability. It means there's not going to be enough money in the system to support all of the workers eligible to get benefits.
The city's unfunded pension liability was put at $862 million.
We've been talking about this for decades. It's been a cloud that's been hanging over this city budget for such a long time.
So how does all this relate to MSD? Well, a big chunk of the retirement system is MSD employees, paying a percentage of their salaries into the fund.
If you were to remove those 600 employees from the retirement system, that's a big chunk of individuals, and that, in my words, tanks the system, right? It's not healthy. It's not a good thing for CRS.
That's Hamilton County Commissioner Denise Driehaus explaining why the city can't just give the whole sewer system to the county and be done with it.
Way back in episode 2, we talked about how the city and county finally came to an agreement to separate amicably. Denise helped negotiate that plan.
The city runs the system, but we create the policy to inform how they run it. And so when we don't have a direct line to the director, some of the engineers, some of the attorneys, it just becomes cumbersome. It was this balance of reasonable rates, keeping the employees in CRS, and then providing a system where we had some direct communication with the people that were making the calls over at MSD.
So the city and the county proposed a plan to create a 5-member citizen board to handle major policy decisions for MSD, including hiring the director.
All MSD employees would be working for Hamilton County instead of the city of Cincinnati, but crucially would stay in the Cincinnati retirement system, at least in the short term.
City and county officials went to OPERS and said, hey, can you take over the entire Cincinnati retirement system instead of just the MSD employees?
Everybody knew OPERS would probably say no, because absorbing CRS would mean taking on that giant unfunded liability. So Denise says they factored that in when asking OPERS to take over the city's whole pension fund.
We pitched that, but said, you don't have to take CRS right away. Look at their financials, look at their fiscal stability, and just take a look every 5 years at whether or not you think it's a good idea to absorb CRS into OPERS. It's your call. You make the decision. The only obligation is to take a look every 5 years. So that was what we were asking them to do.
And what was the response?
Well, after about a year's time of us calling and badgering them for a decision, eventually they said they were not interested in that, which was very disappointing after all the work we had put into it and an agreement between the city and the county, which was not easy to achieve.
This is where the whole deal fell apart. And the retirement fund issue is why finding a better management situation for MSD is so difficult.
But there is one option that wasn't available back in 1968. And it could be a solution now.
Interestingly, it came up in a totally unrelated news story this year.
$439 million. That's the deficit projected in the city's operating budget over the next decade. The plan to cut that deficit, now addressed in a 77-page report.
A group called the Futures Commission recently put out a report recommending ways to stabilize the city budget. Mayor Aftab Pirval created the commission, which included business, community, and labor union leaders.
One of the challenges they looked at is the retirement system's unfunded liability problem.
Their solution? Make Greater Cincinnati Water Works a regional water district. This would not be privatizing the water utility, but it would mean creating a new public entity that would buy all the GCWW assets and expand service throughout the area.
Cincinnati would use the revenue as a one-time boost for the retirement system, reducing the unfunded liability enough for OPERS to be willing to take it over.
A regional water utility would be regulated by Ohio Revised Code Section 6119. That's the same section of state law that governs the Northeast Ohio Regional Sewer District. Those are the folks up in Cleveland managing both sewer and stormwater.
And it just so happens to be the kind of regional system that MSD Director Diana Christie thinks might be a good fit for Cincinnati.
We have limitations because of what county sewer districts are limited by. And if we were under a different governance structure, like a 6119, we could develop something that, you know, is more suited to what we need here in Greater Cincinnati. It's not necessarily for me to explore it, but it is what I think should be the long-term goal. I think it is the best way for us to really work toward these type of solutions that we're going to need.
It's not just the governance between the city and the county that would change. A regional district like this could include stormwater too, just like up in Cleveland.
This means the area could cover two birds with one umbrella, or something like that, by simplifying how we address sewer and stormwater.
Stormwater as a whole across the county is at times very fragmented.
Eric Saylor is the director of Cincinnati's Stormwater Management Utility. He says the fragmented system of stormwater management is one of the area's biggest challenges.
We don't have one singular entity governing everyone, overseeing that work. And you have a lot of different pieces. And so every municipality is really focused upon its municipality and its infrastructure.
Even though most of Hamilton County is part of MSD's sanitary sewer system, each individual community is still responsible for their own stormwater management. But water doesn't recognize political boundaries.
We in the city of Cincinnati are at the bottom of the watershed, and we are right at the edge of the Ohio River. And so all that water comes to us, and then we in the city must deal with that.
So when a town upstream builds a giant new parking lot right by the Mill Creek, all that impervious surface sends a ton of new stormwater into the creek, which flows south towards Cincinnati.
That happens on a more individual scale, too.
And we've seen situations like that where we would get a call from a customer and it would be a bit of a head scratcher to us because we'd never had problems in that area before. There was more water in the creek than there used to be, they felt, and it was coming up onto their private property a little bit more. And so we just put our boots on and kept walking up that creek and walked and walked and walked and found out that another municipality had put in a new development and they had increased water into the creek. And now our customers were having some difficulties that they hadn't had before. And so that just speaks to me of the need to have better communication and collaboration so you're not negatively impacting another community and their customers.
Eric says Cincinnati doesn't have any authority over development in neighboring communities, even if what happens there has a big impact here.
Maybe sometime down the road, if the area decided it wanted to move to a sort of a countywide stormwater and sewer district, that has come up in conversations now and then over the course of my career.
Establishing a regional district is a lengthy process through the county court system, and anyone within the service area would have the right to object to the plan.
You said that's come up in conversation at times throughout your career here locally. And obviously it hasn't happened, so there are, you know, reasons that that hasn't gone forward. Do you think that that's a possibility, or is there too much resistance, you think, to be realistic?
I would consider myself to be an optimist and a realist. And so I'm hopeful that that would be the case, that we could at the very least move more towards an open forum and have more collaboration discussions. Whether or not it becomes that entity or not, I don't know.
The process would be even more complicated if you throw in drinking water by regionalizing Greater Cincinnati Water Works like the Futures Commission has recommended. That would require a public vote of Cincinnati residents.
Basically, this is a possible solution, but it would take years and a lot of cooperation between dozens of municipalities.
But in the meantime, we are seeing these groups work together more often. County Commissioner Denise Driehaus says she organized a meeting about 6 months ago.
So we brought the engineer in and MSD was there, stormwater was there, and we had this really interesting conversation about, oh, we're all kind of solving for the same thing, and there's federal money available to help solve these issues. And so instead of the city going for a grant and the county goes for a grant and the engineer, why don't we do this together? It helps our chances, by the way, because the federal government loves it when there's that kind of collaboration, and it keeps us from competing with one another.
Federal grants will be really important for the future of sewer and storm water management. But even if Cincinnati and Hamilton County avoid competing against each other for those dollars, they'll still be competing against other communities with the same kinds of problems.
There's another snag, too. Even with unlimited money, MSD would have a hard time spending it.
Right now, many of the projects that are related to the consent decree are behind schedule. They do not have the capacity to get more projects out on time. Even if we did raise rates, there is a challenge with workforce and there is a challenge with supply chain. A lot of it post-COVID. We hear this in every sector, but I've heard Diana Christie say more than once, the project is delayed because we couldn't get the materials for the project.
That's only expected to get worse over the next few years, with a bunch of giant projects happening in Cincinnati soon. The construction of a companion bridge to the Brent Spence, a replacement for the Western Hills Viaduct, and renovating the Cincinnati Convention Center.
Cool, 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 cool. So, is there any good news? More on Backed Up right after this.
This week on Looking Up.
The average backyard astronomer can actually do something that the major astronomers generally cannot.
I talk with Robert Nemiroff, one of the creators of your favorite daily dose of inspiration, the website Astronomy Picture of the Day.
It occurred to us that we could come up with a web page and every day just post one of these images. And since we're both astronomers, we could just give a short explanation as to what it really is.
Or wherever you get your podcasts, and WVXU.org.
Did you know I sometimes talk about local issues other than the sewer system? Shocking, I know. If you appreciate local journalism like this podcast, you should check out the other great work of the WVXU news team. You can sign up for The Daily View, a newsletter of top stories every weekday morning. And our local news is always free, never ever behind a paywall, at WVXU.org.
If you're not a regular listener to Cincinnati Public Radio, you might be surprised to learn we're nonprofit. That means we need support from our audience to operate. So if you want to support more local journalism like Backed Up, consider donating at WVXU.org.
So far this episode, things have looked pretty bleak. Cities all over the world are dumping raw sewage all over the place. Nobody has a magic wand to fix it, and all the solutions cost so much money.
Let's shift gears and put some more optimistic questions up on the bulletin board. What does success look like, and how will we know when MSD is in compliance with the Clean Water Act?
Well, there's never been an expectation that combined sewer overflows will go away completely. Compliance is more about having controls in place to make it very rare.
Lots of communities are under a federal consent decree for combined sewer overflows, and each consent decree is unique. They're kind of like snowflakes in that way. Each consent decree was negotiated by local officials and the EPA and has its own goals for compliance.
The overall objective is to reduce combined sewer overflows in terms of how much we reduce them. Those are set based on the CSOs themselves.
In this context, CSO means the actual pipe that dumps untreated sewage and stormwater during heavy rain. Right now, MSD has 201 overflow points permitted by the EPA. That means the feds know about them, and MSD has to report how often overflows happen.
Success for MSD means eliminating some of these overflow points altogether. But it could also mean reducing how often a certain CSO overflows, or reducing how much overflow goes through that pipe.
The overall approach has always been tied to affordability.
The EPA gives cities flexibility in meeting requirements, especially cities that are financially disadvantaged.
Whereas we do not have an end date, we have to schedule each phase of the work based on what is affordable for the community, for our ratepayers, based on the projects and the scope of work.
So here's what happens next. The county just recently submitted phase 2B of the consent decree to federal regulators. This is the next step in reducing combined sewer overflows.
The proposal is to build a high-rate treatment facility at the Little Miami Wastewater Treatment Plant. It's basically a supplemental facility that only operates during wet weather, taking on the extra storm water that the existing treatment plant can't handle.
This phase of work is expected to cost about $1.8 billion, and that means rates will have to go up. An estimated 4.5% every year between 2025 and 2035.
And that won't even be the end of the consent decree. There are still more projects to complete.
In 2009, MSD was dumping about 14 billion gallons of combined sewage and stormwater every year. Now, that's down to between 6 and 7 billion gallons a year, depending on the weather. Phase 2B is expected to reduce that by another 1.5 billion gallons.
MSD and other groups are measuring the effect on the Mill Creek and the Ohio River.
25 years ago, American Rivers named the Mill Creek the most endangered urban river in North America. Pollution from combined sewer overflows added to industrial waste being dumped straight into the creek.
Pollution until the early 1980s killed almost all life in the stream. It was a dumping ground, not habitable for creatures big or small.
This is a video from the Mill Creek Alliance, a nonprofit working to restore the Mill Creek.
Our goal since 1997 has been to make the stream a community asset instead of a regional embarrassment by doing millions of dollars of stream and habitat restoration projects and working alongside government agencies like the Metropolitan Sewer District of Greater Cincinnati.
Depending on the time of year and amount of recent rainfall, the Mill Creek is usually safe for kayaking or canoeing. but none of the creek is considered safe for wading or swimming yet.
The latest report from Orsenco says bacteria in the Ohio River has improved a lot. Wait, is Orsenco a new acronym?
Yeah, actually, I think it's our last acronym. Except it doesn't really follow the usual acronym rules. Orsenco is the Ohio River Valley Sanitation Commission, which monitors water quality along the entire 981-mile river.
Orsenco says bacteria in the Ohio River decreased significantly between 2001 and 2015, and they're studying more recent years, too. If there hasn't been a heavy rainstorm recently, it's usually safe for recreation like boating or even swimming.
But there are lots of ways to pollute waterways, and this podcast only covers one of them.
Silly girl, just say poo-poo.
The Ohio River is also endangered by pollution from toxic chemical discharges, coal ash, and mine drainage.
Another metric for MSD to consider is sewer backups.
The addition of the sewer backup program into our consent decree was really the result of the Sierra Club's involvement in the decree, and it is something that is different than most other communities.
Sewer backups aren't part of most consent decrees because they don't actually violate the Clean Water Act. So it's kind of a big deal that in Cincinnati, MSD spends so much time and money helping homeowners who have a sewer backup.
In this case, there aren't specific metrics to meet in the consent decree, but surely there are fewer sewer backups now after 20 years of work to improve the combined sewer system, right?
It's hard to track progress on this. It's not as simple as counting the number of backup reports and hoping it goes down every year.
For one thing, it's entirely dependent on the weather. One year might have several big rainstorms that overwhelm the system, and the next year might only have one or two. 2023, for example, was a really dry year, and MSD got the fewest number of requests for a sewer backup investigation than any other year since 2004.
But MSD also relies on homeowners reporting their sewer backup. So more SBU reports might actually be a good thing because it means more people know they can go to MSD for help.
Part of the consent decree is trying to prevent sewer backups, not just cleaning up after they happen.
Big projects like the Lick Run Greenway and high-rate treatment plants help with this in some neighborhoods. But there are also ways to keep an individual home from backing up.
MSD will pay to install a prevention device on a home if it's had at least two eligible backups within a five-year period. That means the sewer backup has to have been caused by incapacity in the sewer system, not a private problem like a tree root or a grease clog.
The average cost per home is almost $50,000. In the last 20 years, MSD has installed sewer backup prevention devices in about 1,400 homes.
Obviously, it's really encouraging to talk about the progress, but there's still a long way to go. And public officials have a lot of important work to pay attention to. Poverty, a housing crisis, heck, even our potholes. And there's danger of kicking the can too far down the road. But Cincinnati is lucky to have a group of people keeping public officials on track. Very vocally.
Dashing through the poo.
Communities United for Action and the local chapter of the Sierra Club have been the most active on this issue. Here's Wanda Moncrie Ball.
You know, we have a reputation of being a bunch of little old women that are bullies. Have you heard that?
No.
No, they do. They say we're bullies, yeah. You know, because we're persistent. But we're supposed to be persistent. And we have the time to be persistent because we're retired. That has been one of the biggest challenges, trying to have people that are in my circle become rebels and try to fight this thing. My cousin said, well, you're just passionate. You know, I said, okay, you know, how do I make you passionate? Because there's power in numbers and strength in numbers.
We as a community also need to pay attention to who this impacts the most. Some neighborhoods have more severe flooding because of the topography and how streets and buildings are designed. And those neighborhoods, by the way, are all across the socioeconomic spectrum.
But even if a sewer backup or neighborhood flood could happen to anyone, not everyone is in a financial position to deal with it.
We are living in complex systems, and all that means is there's more and more layers of things to think about.
That's Valerie Aquino, working for the City of Cincinnati on increasing resilience to extreme weather events. Her position is funded by a grant from Fuse, a national nonprofit that works with local governments on racial equity.
Everyone can increase their resilience. So resilience is basically just being able to recover from a shock. You know, along Beekman Corridor, I went to some Communities United for Action CUFA meetings, and most of the membership there are fixed income. They're retired or they're at that age when they should be. So you can imagine that if back-to-back storms are hitting them, which they had from like 2018 to 2021, there were like six big storm events. If they're getting that back-to-back, what's that resiliency threshold? So I'm looking at that kind of resiliency threshold and making sure that that's equitably distributed or supported.
Valerie is part of the team that worked on the grant application we talked about in episode 3. Up to $20 million from FEMA to build more resilient infrastructure.
And that's going to be looking at different project scopings along Beekman Corridor to help with kind of identifying hazards we may not know about or hazards that you anticipate seeing, but maybe we don't see, especially within chronically disadvantaged neighborhoods who are experiencing cumulative health risks.
It takes a village to fix a sewer system. MSD has a few big goals for improving how the sewer utility operates.
Last episode, we talked about the customer assistance program, which gives some low-income seniors a discount on their sewer bills. MSD estimates about 19,000 people are eligible for the discount, but only about 17% of them are actually enrolled.
According to the National Council on Aging, this is really common for programs like this, and not just for utilities.
The group says older adults may not know how to apply, or may assume the process is complicated. And many believe other people need more help than they do.
MSD Director Diana Christie says the district aims to reach 25% enrollment for eligible customers by the end of 2024. That would be about 1,500 more people.
A lot of the goals center around better communication with elected officials, with other public agencies, and with the public.
MSD has made changes in the last few months to how they tell the public that a combined sewer overflow is happening so that people can avoid coming into contact with the contaminated water for at least 72 hours.
This is totally separate from sewer backups. MSD has no way of knowing where those happen until they're reported by homeowners.
But when it comes to untreated sewage flowing into public waterways, MSD can track exactly when each overflow pipe is active and for how long.
There are signs posted at each combined sewer overflow point, and MSD used to send vague emails anytime an overflow was likely to happen.
They basically said, anytime it rains anywhere in Hamilton County, stay away from creeks and rivers. But even if sewage is overflowing into the Ohio River, that doesn't necessarily mean canoeing on the Mill Creek is a bad idea.
Now, instead of an email, MSD has a real-time interactive map that shows exactly what's happening at all 200 overflow points.
So if you have plans to spend time out on the Mill Creek or the Ohio River, you can check the map to see if there's been an overflow. And if you're like me and your free time is more often spent on the couch watching Star Trek, you don't need to check the map anyway.
Where do all of us fit into this? Anyone listening to this podcast can do something about water quality. We all have responsibility for what we flush down the toilet.
Remember the three P's, pee, poo, and paper, but only toilet paper, of course. That means no grease or oil, no condoms, tampons, cotton swabs.
And remember, flushable wipes are a fantasy and a myth.
If you live in a single-family home, you could move your downspout so it directs stormwater into your yard or a rain barrel instead of going into the combined sewer system.
If you live in Cincinnati, you'll need permission from the city to do this, and that's probably true for other communities, so make sure you do your research first.
You can also think about ways you might be polluting stormwater as it heads to streams and rivers. Here's Cincinnati Stormwater Management Utility Director Eric Saylor again.
Don't throw trash into the streets because it could end up in the creek. Don't overuse pesticides and herbicides on your lawn. Try to minimize the amount of salt that you use. All of that has a negative impact on the water quality piece of our world and the stormwater world. I think people are, as a whole, are more cognizant of that. And hopefully they'll continue to move in that direction.
These things won't solve all of our problems, but the more of us trying, the better.
Basically, go out there and be good humans.
All right, here we are, finally arrived at the denouement. We don't have a villain to unmask, but we still have a lot to think about.
Former MSD employee and historian Jack Rennekamp says we have to look backward to understand the future.
History is always with us. It's something that develops and advances and progresses. So those terms and concepts that were in use in 1968 are still in use in 2023, but they have different layers that have been placed upon them. As Shrek said in one of the movies, you know, he's like an onion. You have to peel back the layers.
Layers! Onions have layers.
That's the same thing you have to do with history. You have to peel back the layers, and especially local sanitary sewer history, and see, okay, what did this mean? And does it still have relevance for today? The answer is usually yes, it does, but it's interpreted within a different context because there are different applications now, there are different requirements, the laws are different, and the benefits are different. Things that MSD is doing today are very similar to what they did at the creation, but it just has a different resonance to it.
Before this podcast, I was shocked to find out it takes more than 650 people working at MSD just for me to be able to flush my toilet. We learned so much about how incredibly difficult and complicated it is just to get rid of our poop.
We couldn't live in community without an effective sewer system. As gross as it is, we need that to live in community.
That's MSD water engineer Reese Johnson, backed by popular demand.
And so I found my professional calling in water, and more specifically in wastewater or rainwater, and it falls and mixes together, is because that's a place where we as humans have an impact on the environment and potentially on each other. And that's where, as an engineer, I feel I can use my skills to help us as a civilization, as a community.
I, for one, will never again take sewage infrastructure for granted.
And to some extent, I think we have to admit that indoor plumbing is expensive.
Solutions that exist in the future will involve investing hundreds of millions of dollars. But that's the price of progress. That's also the price of existence in a modern world that you have to pay. Go back to thinking about a day without sewers. What would you do? If you don't want to have sewers, then we better start digging privy pits in our backyards.
Much as Shrek might have had.
Exactly.
Listen, I've used an actual outhouse before, just like Shrek, and I'm pretty grateful that's not my everyday experience.
MSD Director Diana Christie is pretty protective of the hundreds of people who keep that system running for the rest of us.
MSD is a public entity made up of public employees who do the job they do because they have a sense of service to their community, and they come in and they do their job every day in a way that is the best they can do. The system we have, we're maintaining it, we're managing it the best way we can, and we're doing it very well.
MSD has a whole page on its website for honors and awards. You'll see things there like the Lick Run Greenway and the Smart Sewers. But there's also recognition for less flashy accomplishments, like wastewater treatment plants with 100% permit compliance over several years. That's not to say there aren't still real concerns or ways MSD needs to improve.
I think everyone's trying to do the best with what they have, and this challenge isn't unique to Cincinnati. But, you know, we're continuing to find new ways to tackle it and work together.
And this is just one complicated system crucial to the life we're used to living. It feels very fragile sometimes.
I think my biggest takeaway is that the world feels overwhelming and complex, but we can understand complicated stuff like this. And the more we understand, the better we can contribute to making the world work better for all of us.
So I guess case closed? We're turning in our magnifying glasses and our corncob pipes?
I don't think the mysteries of water are ever really solved. You just have to follow the stream wherever it takes you.
Okay, but for real though?
Yeah, let's get this bulletin board out of my office, please. Backed Up is a Cincinnati Public Radio podcast produced with support from PRX and made possible in part by a grant from the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation.
Backed Up is reported and produced by Becca Costello and Ella Rowan with support from Casey Kuhn.
A lot of people helped put this podcast together. Leslie Smith, Tana Weingartner, Jen Merritt, Ronnie Salerno, Zach Carrion, Marshall Verbsky, Stephen Baum, Asiya Michaud Johnson, Brittany Matey, and Kevin Reynolds.
Marianne Zalesnik is our VP of News. Janelle Walton is our VP of Content. Nicole Tiffany made our podcast cover art. Special thanks to Sam Ransahoff, Tony Carlson, Grace Abler, Stephanie Kuo, and Mike Rousseau.
We interviewed a few people that we didn't have time to include. So thank you to Matthew Fitzsimmons, Holly Christman, Steve Kennett, Professor Francis De Los Reyes, Devonna Marshall, Brad Blankenship, and lots of folks at the Mill Creek Wastewater Treatment Plant.
Go to wvxu.org/backedup to find a transcript of this episode and a link to a very cool digital exhibit about the history of Cincinnati sewers from our friends at the Cincinnati and Hamilton County Public Library.
And I just have to say, I am getting emotional about finishing up this last episode because it's been really incredible to work on this with you. And I could not have done it without you. And I'm just really proud of what we were able to put together. And I am just really glad that you're my friend.
So I also wrote something. Hold on.
Oh, no.
I feel very lucky to have had this opportunity to work with Becca, who is one of the kindest, most patient people I know. Working with Becca was a breeze. Even on the hardest days, we share a sense of humor and we both love Cincinnati. And I think that kept us going through all of this. And I'm so glad that you're my friend.
Now I am crying.
And thank you to all of you for listening.
Thank you for listening and for sticking with us to the very end, like toilet paper stuck on your shoe. Well, if they let us anywhere near these things, I know my way around a WWTPCEPTEHRT. So get me in there.
I'm going to ask the crick what it thinks about our new podcast, Backed Up. Okay, I am smelling things. I freaking love this town. I love this stinky sewer town. Stinky sewer city.
That's what we should call it. Stinky sewer city.
The big S.
Sort through the BS to find the real S.